Hello, and welcome back to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoy your stay. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Zach.
We've covered a lot of different aspects of software development on this podcast through the years, but most of them share a common theme. We are either implicitly or explicitly assuming that the interaction between user and software follows what you might describe as the happy path. By happy path, I don't necessarily mean that the user is a genius or that the user is the most activated advocate for your product in the world. I'm thinking a lot more basic than that. I'm thinking something as simple as the happy path is when the user of your software is largely intending to use your product in the way that you intend them to use it without violating any rules that you or other governing bodies have set up. Generally speaking, not all interactions with users will follow that happy path. Today, we're exploring the other paths through your software, things that you might consider strange, inappropriate, or even potentially abusive uses of a software platform. To help us with that discussion, we brought on three members of the team at Klaviyo who are very familiar with platform abuse and misuse, and we're also going to be treating Zach as more of a panelist today than a co-host. So let's go ahead and start with introductions. Could you please give a quick introduction of yourself, the team that you're on, and what you currently do at Klaviyo? Let's go ahead and start off with Francis.
Hello, I'm Francis. I've been at Klaviyo for a little over 6 years. Originally started on the deliverability and compliance team. Now I'm on our software engineering team focused on building out email pipeline.
Yeah, one of the first people I met when I joined at Klaviyo. Fantastic to have you on today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Next up, Shane.
My name is Shane McElroy. I'm the product manager for the email deliverability and compliance R&D team at Klaviyo. Part of the scope of our product area is maintaining the health and reputation of Klaviyo's email sending infrastructure, which does include abuse detection and mitigation. So on that front, I work with engineering, data science, and other teams to try to improve our anti-abuse systems.
Fantastic. Happy to have you on as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
And finally, Wei.
Hello, my name is Wei. I am a member of the compliance team on the deliverability and compliance team here at Klaviyo. My day-to-day role is basically mitigating risk from our platform, folks that are not following the happy path, as Michael mentioned earlier.
Fantastic. Also, your first time on, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
And Zach, we usually just have you in the intro as, hi, I'm your co-host, Zach, but would you like to give the people at home a reminder of why we're talking to you about this topic as well?
Sure thing. So hello, my name is Zach. So yeah, I'm a senior data scientist on the DISCO team here at Klaviyo, and I'm the main touch point for all things deliverability and compliance, and been involved pretty much in any data science related compliance or deliverability tooling that's been built over the last year and a half or so. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about some of the funny issues that we've been seeing.
Yeah, fantastic. It's great to have all of you on. This is an area that I've honestly been wanting to talk about for a while, and I'm excited that we're actually getting to talk about it today. But I would actually like to start off by talking about something we won't be talking about today. We had some discussion internally before we actually jumped on and recorded this, and we agreed during this episode, we aren't going to be discussing any solutions. And I guess that might sound a little strange to people who are listening to this, so I just wanted to start off with why. Why are we not discussing solutions today?
I think understandably, we don't want to reveal any of the secret sauce behind our anti-abuse systems, because keeping that information confidential is essential to protecting our platform, protecting our customers, and in some cases, the general public, so people at home that might be recipients of emails or text messages.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting type of problem that isn't really very normal to other data science work, where if you kind of show your hand at the solution that you're building, then that will change the system itself. And anytime that you build any tooling, that changes the system inherently by itself. I'm sure that we'll get into this today, but the types of people that we'll be discussing today are remarkably savvy. They are really good at figuring out what kind of tooling we're putting in place, and it's kind of a constant cat and mouse game. So I would not be surprised if they're listening in and trying to get some insight into how we're trying to stop them.
And also to add, it's just like the solutions we have in place for Klaviyo may not apply to the different listeners. on different platforms. So primarily don't want to hand out a secret sauce. So I don't want to play cat and mouse game all day and just to have to come up with a new solution 5 days down the road. So yeah, we would like to keep it high level and make it easier for all of us here in the long term.
I think that's a really good point. you don't, what works for us isn't necessarily going to work for a different platform, potentially even in the same area, but certainly in different areas where misuse of the platform looks different. And I think that's heterogeneity. I want to reassure listeners at home, while we aren't going to go into any solutions today, there is still a lot to cover and a lot to learn. This is a complex, messy area. It presents a lot of challenges for someone who's looking to do data science or honestly just any other work, but it also presents a lot of opportunities. So we're going to focus this episode mostly on some of those challenges and opportunities. And I promise we're only going to be able to touch on some of them in that time. The space is massive. Let's go ahead and start off by getting a bit of a lay of the land. Let's begin with the human behavior that underlies all of the data science problems here. In the intro, I brought up the idea of users who don't follow the happy path with how they use your software. If you had to divide interactions like that into a few large, broad categories, what would that look like?
I think at the highest level, the way that I think about this is that there are accounts that are trying to follow our rules and accounts that are not trying to follow our rules. There are customers who are trying to be happy path and customers who don't have any interest in that. And then maybe to further divide the non-happy path customers, there are those who are directly malicious and trying to actually do bad things. And then those who maybe just don't really care so much about the rules, but are still legitimate businesses trying to use our platform the way that it's, you know, largely intended to be used, just to, you know, circumvent some of our terms of use.
I would even split that non-happy path legitimate user down a little bit further. So in one case, we have users who are following marketing best practices, but operating in an industry or maybe marketing a product or service that we as a company do not want to support. So that's on one side, but then we could also have legitimate users that are in industry we intend to support, but are not following marketing best practices. And for the purpose of protecting our platform and our customers, we feel that they are not a good fit for using Klaviyo.
Yeah, and then one even level deeper is can also get split out more by channel, right? There are some channels that have rules and regulations that don't allow us to work with a certain industry, just purely on, like, example, you know, the SMS side where maybe email, we don't have those issues.
Yeah, to add to Francis' point, within the last 2 years working on SMS, coming from email, it has been a challenge trying to understand the limitations that SMS puts on the channel, more specifically what peers allow, what they don't allow. It's not something that we have control over. And with email, coming from email, you know, it's a free-for-all, if I say, compared to SMS. It's just trying to learn what peers allow and what they don't allow. And that splits it even further regarding the happy path and the non-happy path.
It sounds like there's already a lot of heterogeneity between and within these archetypes. I am curious, other than the fact that we have users that aren't following the happy path, are there any similarities between these categories? So I guess, obviously, there are a lot of differences, but is there anything that is helpful to kind of think of them together as a group, or are they really these distinct disparate groups?
I think with the happy path or like the non-happy path where, you know, they are a legitimate user and they're not following best practices, a lot of them are primarily education-based. They don't understand like things such as what our terms of service allows, and then also marketing best practices relating to consent collection, or you're not supposed to list share or buy list. I think these are all can be solved with education.
Yeah, to echo what Wei was saying, I think education is a big part when it comes to the non-happy path. There's a lot of customers who come who might have been doing this for years or maybe even decades, right? Where the best practices back then didn't exist or weren't very easily accessible, where nowadays best practices are very published by, you know, ESPs and industry like leaders and stuff like that around how and strategies around sending and stuff like that. So education's a lot more accessible. It's just making sure we get in front of the customer.
I think one point of difficulty is that you don't always know if someone just needs to be educated or if they're actually trying to get around your systems. Like those two types of users may do the exact same thing, but then one of them you say, oh yeah, you can't send any cannabis related content over SMS, and they are fine with that. And then the other group, you tell them that, and then they they just go, how can we evade detection? So that's a kind of a tricky point.
100%. I think to that point, it's all about maybe not showing your hand right away when you're, you know, communicating with the customer, right? You know, that's the big thing, right?
I think maybe another one is that regulations themselves can change and the interpretation of those regulations can change. So a customer that may have been fine may kind of now be classified as something that we can no longer send their content. The federal regulations around what can be sent aren't quite as specific as, you know, exactly how much of a certain type of content is necessary for it to be really categorized as that content. And we end up having a lot of discussions internally around exactly where the lines are drawn around some of these categories of content.
Yeah, or even to further your point, region-based. There are some countries, like I remember when GDPR was first popping up, the whole email ecosystem was terrified almost, right? Now looking back at it, it wasn't as bad as we originally thought, but it did cause a lot of good change, right? People making sure that they have the right data in the right places and stuff like that.
Yeah, and honestly, that ties in with some previous episodes we've done on just, this is not a problem that's new to data science. This is not something that's unique to just this sphere. I mean, we had an entire episode about iOS 15 when kind of the entire email marketing landscape shifted and a lot of data science work had to figure out how to take that into account. So it's certainly not a problem that's unique to this. And I think it's refreshing to kind of hear that some of these large sweeping changes and the fact that the ground truth isn't set, like that's a problem that if you want to really do data science in this sphere or others, you need to figure out how to deal with that problem. I guess I'd like to start getting into a few of these categories of different users and talk a little bit about what they bring up specifically that's like unique to that type of user and some of the challenges that creates on the data side and on the data science side. So I guess let's focus on the category that I would say, at least on the surface, seems the least bad. And that's from the discussion we just had, kind of actual users who are trying to use the platform for activities that we would consider normal, but for one reason or another, they're doing something we don't want them to do. What might be some examples of that?
The first one that comes to mind for me is just following best practices when it comes to making sure you focus on engagement and click tracking and ultimately listening to your customer's voice, how they're interacting and reacting to your emails or SMS.
I think another is this consent collection. Are they doing it properly and are they doing it compliantly? Are they getting the proper permissions from their audience to message them? Basically, like Francis said, listening to your audience at the end of the day is you should listen to your audience to know, do they want your messages?
I think the biggest one for me in this category is the so-called SHAFT accounts. So SHAFT is an acronym, stands for sex, hate, alcohol, tobacco, firearms. Cannabis is also included in that. And these are broad categories of content which are federally regulated for SMS marketing communication. You're just not allowed to send marketing messages which are about that or which will link someone back to a website selling that content. These customers are trying to use our platform to just send marketing messages for these types of companies, but it's just not what we're supposed to be doing. It's not what we allow them to do. And then beyond that, there are a few categories of content that we don't allow platform-wide. One of those is gambling, a lot of financial-related things. We don't allow crypto. So yeah, these are things where the user might be well-intentioned. They probably have a legitimate business, but we're just not allowing them to do some things on our platform.
Yeah, and to expand on that point, we have essentially an acceptable use policy that governs what industries and products and services we will support. And in some cases, if the product or service is illegal, if it's predatory, if it could be considered ethically or morally dubious, it might just be something we don't want to allow on our platform. So Zach mentioned a couple others would be multi-level marketing schemes, affiliate marketing, any kind of like credit repair services. So really the goal there is to maintain our reputation in the industry. Like, we are part of a marketing community. We want to be upstanding citizens in that community. And so part of the way we do that is by deciding who and who isn't allowed to use Klaviyo.
The answer to this might be simple, so this might be a quick one, but I want to ask this with all of the different categories we go into. So if we think back to people who were maybe not following best practices on consent collection or following best practices on listening to engagement and who wants their messages and some of these shaft companies, I guess, why do people do this? Just what actually motivates this type of behavior?
I think for shaft, it falls into two categories that we're kind of discussing earlier. One is a lack of education. I had no idea until I was asked to be able to detect shaft companies that this is federally regulated. So lack of education, maybe lack of understanding exactly where they lie. It's actually quite strict. So it's not just if you're a dispensary selling recreational marijuana, even if you're a dog food company and you have one treat that has CBD for dogs joint pain, you know, they might not think that they're prohibited from sending content related to that, but it turns out that they are. And then I think in addition to that, there are some shaft companies that just know, they know that they're not supposed to be sending this content and they just keep trying to do it anyways. And we've probably all, everyone on this call has some stories of watching users progressively try to circumvent our rules. We're not going to talk about solutions. This is the one hint that I will drop. For example, we'll flag if you have the term CBD in your SMS messages. Just we get flagged if that appears. So we want to know on our end if that's happening. That's an ancient tool that we have in place, and we have vastly more sophisticated tooling going on that we will not get into. But as an example there, I've seen customers that will attempt to send a message that says CBD, and they'll try it like seven times, realizing that it's just not going to work. And then they'll say, okay, what if I do C, comma, B, comma, D? And what if I do, you know, they'll just like try all these iterations on it. And it's kind of hilarious to just watch them like just try to find the edges of our, you know, of our rules and then get around it. So that's a big part of this as well.
Yeah. And people can still try to force our system, but we're just one layer out of a lot of other layers above us when delivering SMS messages. You know, our partners have their own filtering, and then the carriers have their own filtering. So they might get through one layer of brute forcing Klaviyo, but might not be able to brute force AT&T, for example.
That's interesting. So I guess almost ignorance in some sense motivating it to the idea that they think this is the only step they can get caught.
On the best practices side, it's often similar. There's the educational side, and then there's the I know what I'm doing is bad and I'm just going to continue to do it side. We operate a freemium platform, so we want to give new young marketers the chance to like grow and build their own business. And like we talked about a little bit, like consent, especially with email and SMS, it's challenging. And there's a lot of different things you need to learn. It can depend by region, by channel. So we want to give new marketers the opportunity to learn. So usually the first step is education.
Again, this question might have a pretty obvious answer. I think we all heard the words federally regulated, and that certainly suggests at least one answer to this question. But just what are some of the challenges that this sort of behavior poses generally for a platform?
I think the big one that Zach mentioned earlier was really just knowing who's being malicious or who's just maybe uneducated, right? Handling the communication there is hard because on one side of it, you know, you just want to outright be like, hey, goodbye, good luck. But if it is an educational opportunity, you obviously want to provide the best user experience you can because you want to educate a brand, potentially, you know, keep them around, keep the business growing, right? So I think that's one of the bigger challenges that I've seen and experienced myself is where do you use that nourishing tone versus the goodbye tone?
Yeah, I feel like these customers are like kind of like rebellious teenagers that you don't want to like lock them out of the house. Like you still you're still working with them. You're not just shutting them out, but you need to kind of keep an eye on them because they are going to try to get around. But I think a big challenge of this is that, as you mentioned, federally regulated. Like, we can't mess around with this. This is not, some of these things are our terms of service. Like, yeah, you're not supposed to talk about crypto, but if you do, it's not the end of the world. We'll find you and say that's not part of our terms of service. But Klaviyo itself is on the line for any breaches of federal regulation. So we need to be, you know, it's something that we need to take very seriously, which is, as we're all noting, challenging when customers don't take it seriously and are actively trying to circumvent it.
Another challenge I can think of is relating to SMS is like rules change. For example, like Shaft Firearms recently, they've expanded it. Firearms will be encompassing weapons and weapons will encompass knives. So now you have a challenge of trying to catch up onto that and try to understand like what sort of knives is allowed, what sort of knives isn't. And as you learn more, you know that tactical knives are not allowed, but your daily cooking knives are allowed. So now we got to find out like how do we delineate the difference between the two knives since it's such a broad category. So that is like a huge challenge that we have to face, like first identifying the dual rule change. And then secondly, how do we, you know what is really restricted? Like, is there a specific category within that category that's restricted? And so on and so forth. So it's just trying to understand it and then try to implement changes to our system to help mitigate folks who are now not allowed to send SMS is a long time to scope out first and then implement the solution within it.
Yeah, Wei, I feel like we had so many fun conversations when I was trying to understand the Shaft ecosystem. And ever since, like, you know, I come across a customer selling harpoon guns. Are harpoon guns guns? Like, are they're intended for some kind of violence, but not necessarily like what firearms are. But, you know, it's not like federal regulations specify everything down to accessories and like every variant of something that could possibly exist.
Yeah, like during the summer, you know, the sale of water gun shoots up. So is water gun considered a Shaft violation or not? So we got kind of like walk that thin line in this gray area of like, what should we allow, what we shouldn't, and then try to discuss within, speak to our partners, and just try to understand, like read the carrier's mind of like, what do they allow? What do they not? And try not to cause any issues with them while doing so.
My perception, at least working slightly outside of the space, is that SMS in particular, basically things change very quickly and have changed very quickly over the last several years. I'm thinking like quiet hours regulation, I think, was something that didn't exist until a few years ago. And then we kind of had to work that into our platform as well. So is my perception correct? Is SMS just moving fast relative to other platforms?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, I started in the SMS field 1 to 2 years ago, and things have substantially changed between then and now. There's a lot of rules that come into play, ranging from federal legislations to state level legislations, then down to carrier restrictions. So we got to keep track of all these different areas and then see like, what can we do to help protect our customers? And then what can we do to help educate those who are not following the best practices relating to SMS?
I think another kind of interesting, unique problem here is that any model has false positives. And we're not just in SMS, we're not dealing with an ecosystem where we're the only model. Like as Wei mentioned, we have partners, there are carriers, they are all also looking at this content. So while we may have our own false positives, and then we can decide what to do about that, we have had incidents in the past where, you know, something like non-alcoholic beer was flagged as alcohol way down the road. And then they come back to us and say, why are you sending this content? And then we need to understand, did the regulations change? Like, do they actually classify this as alcohol, or was this a mistake on their end? So it requires kind of a few layers of communication and understanding with all the downstream partners.
What does this mean in terms of data? What are some of the data or data science specific challenges that this sort of behavior poses?
I think what's exceptionally hard about this is just the ambiguity. It's not like, not only do we not have a clean data set necessarily, but in trying to find content to build models off of or things like that, like you know, as we've been discussing, it's just not always clear what counts as what. And, you know, as we've been discussing, that things can change rapidly, and then that's really hard to rapidly, I mean, any data scientist will tell you that if a model classification, the way that things are classified changes rapidly in a very nuanced way, it's, you know, there's no easy way to go into a model and just make a small, super nuanced change. You need to kind of start from scratch in a way, at least, in kind of rebuilding how you're going to handle this content. So yeah, it's a very interesting and unique set of challenges. And I think, you know, in addition to that, we've been talking about the cat and mouse game. The content that we're looking at, what we're trying to catch, is constantly evolving as they will kind of find out what we're able to catch. So yeah, there are a lot of challenges that I've not personally faced in other data science related work.
Right, like with some classifiers, it's really possible to have canonical test cases. It sounds like the minute that you set canonical test cases here, they're going to be useless 6 months down the line, potentially.
Yeah, we can build test cases for the really obvious content. That's like, so obviously, what are these categories? But the exact boundary line between categories is shifting, so it's hard to have any consistency there.
Let's switch focus a little bit. I think we've brought them up slightly in the discussion, but I'd like to focus more fully on the last category we talked about, the users who kind of, you might say, they have every intention of breaking the rules, as opposed to, you know, an intention to follow them, whether that be the platform's terms of service, acceptable use, as we talked about, or something more severe like federal regulations, potentially. What might be some examples of behavior like that on a platform?
I think the one that we've all have probably have seen dozens, if not hundreds of times, is the outright malicious users, right? Maybe people who are sending phishing content, you know, stuff like that. That's one that instantly comes to mind, especially.
Yeah, so phishing, like Francis mentioned, so malicious actors like intentionally sending emails or texts to get end recipients to reveal passwords or other personal information. We'll also see like just outright scams. So folks attempting to sell fake products or fake services.
There's another category, which I'm going to go very high level on, but there's been folks who are trying to use our system to create accounts on another system. I'm going to leave it at that. Don't want to share too much detail, but that has been a sort of abuse we've been seeing and been trying to tackle.
That was an interesting one. I feel like all of you have really seen some stuff. So I know I'm more acting as a panelist today, but I would like to hear from you all just what some of the craziest attempted abuse that you've seen is. Just the most bizarre or like extreme form of abuse that we've caught and prevented. Francis, you're smiling. You got some, you have some things in mind.
Yes. I'm just not sure which one to say and which ones not to say, because I've seen a lot throughout my history is what I'll say. I think the ones that I always think back to are the really creative phishing, outright malicious people. We've seen people create scripts to create hundreds, if not thousands, of accounts in like a day. Those people, I'm like, okay, they literally sat down and engineered something to scale to try to abuse Klaviyo. And like, that's really smart and very easy for us to pick up on and shut down and, you know, prevent. But it's still crazy to think that we're on somebody's radar who's operating at a scale like that. But I think the ones that, you know, you were talking about earlier where people would do C, B, we've seen that hundreds, if not thousands of times. It's a very common phishing tactic. Tried that with just blank white space characters, right? So in the HTML from like a computer side, you know, it might look like Apple random character P, random character P, you know, but to an end user, it'll just look at it as Apple. And like seeing those, and like, those are always the craziest to me, especially, you know, we're moving into a day and age where AI is just going to make almost their life easier with how accessible it is, that the content already today is like almost one-to-one. The websites are pretty much a one-to-one. So once they really just plug in to get like the wording and how they articulate those messages to be more Apple tone, it'll be interesting to see.
Another one that I've seen that's on my mind is just, we see fake company names and fake websites often. In some cases, these websites will look incredibly legitimate. You could spend 10, 15 minutes clicking around different links in this website. It looks totally real. Looks like it's a real service, real product. These users may send days or even weeks worth of legitimate content that's tied to whatever website they are putting forward. And then they switch to sending malicious content days or weeks later. And it was just all a front all along to try to get past our detection systems.
For me, I think one that really stood out is credit union smishing. And what I mean by that is these folks are going and basically creating accounts and trying to pretend they're a credit union. And then because credit unions are fairly localized to a certain geographic area, you can then, I'm now giving like ideas to folks who might be listening how to be a credit union smisher, but don't worry about that. The whole entire industry is looking after this and preventing it from happening. But what these folks are doing is they are then going and purchase a list for that specific geographic area. For let's take Cambridge Credit Union, for example. You can pretend you're Cambridge Credit Union, go and buy a list of numbers of people based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hopefully that one of those people are a Cambridge Credit Union user, and go ahead and just, I guess what you can say is call spare smish. They call spare fish in email, but I'm going to call spare smish on SMS side, and just target a very specific messaging towards them to make them click the link. And like Shane said, like they are very sophisticated with the websites, with the links they create. It looks almost one-to-one, and people tend to fall for it, click the link, share the credentials, and then next thing you know, these malicious actors have this specific person's credit union credentials, and then, you know, withdraw money, send money, money laundering, all that sort of stuff. So that's one thing that I think is pretty genius. It takes a lot of thought into, you know, ranging from picking a specific geographic area and then targeting the audience within that area to get them to fall for the trick.
I think one thing about this that I always find really interesting is that whenever, and this is rare, but whenever some gap is found, whenever some way of getting around a defense is found, there's just this insane exponential growth immediately in the use of that. So like everything that we've just discussed, we fully have tooling in place to prevent. But I think one example, I think from when I started, we'll see if we should, Michael, tell me if we should edit this out. But one example from when I started that we now have fully accounted for was that somebody figured out that they could put in some Unicode character into emails that nobody on any engineering team had ever seen or heard of before. It was like some weird blank space character that just nobody knew about, and it just was breaking something in our checks. We saw that once, and then within a few days, there were just like, I think like hundreds or thousands of accounts attempting to do that. And by then we had put in a fix for that, but it's just like, I don't know if these people have like forums online, if they're all chatting, but it seems like their ability to mobilize once they've found the rare gap in our defenses is really remarkable and kind of insane. It really feels like they are like well-run, efficient criminal organizations trying to carry out this abuse.
I mean, if you think about it, they kind of are, right? Like this is their livelihood as much as like to like not try to make them look or put a like a nice spotlight on these people, but like, right, this is how they make their money or feed their families. So, you know, but yeah, I've heard some crazy stories on like how they are very organized, but maybe for another podcast.
What are some of the challenges that this poses? Again, generally, like for a platform, I guess, like Klaviyo or for another software platform, having users who were trying to carry out behavior like this, what are some of the challenges that it poses for you?
I think the big one from my point of view, and Zach mentioned this earlier, is you're never going to have a model that has no false positives, right? Of how do you really handle or try to minimize those false positives? Because like, right, if you have a system that flags someone as malicious, most likely the intended experience for them is going to be terminating the account, right? So it's just like, how do you come back from that? Because that obviously from the end customer's pretty bad user experience. But the other thing is, how do you build a model that Because, for example, if Apple really does sign up or a legitimate brand uses something that might be looking similar to phishing, because the reality is phishing content almost always is sourced from legitimate content, right? With just some minor tweaks to it to maybe try to get around us, et cetera. So it's a very hard line to walk without providing a terrible user experience.
Yeah, I think to build on that, it's kind of the interplay of the reality of false positives, the fact that this is very serious and we can't really just mess around and let this go on our platform. And as you mentioned there at the end, kind of the user experience part of it, because for bad actors, we do not want to tip our hand. We don't want them to know what we're able to detect at all. And that's a really bad user experience to just get something canceled or, you know, just have problems using our platform where we don't explain what's going on at all. I want bad actors to have a bad user experience, but for any false positive, that's kind of catastrophic. You know, we don't want a good customer to have that kind of user experience. And like going back to the CBD one, the one solution that I'm showing is we've had legitimate businesses where their business abbreviation is CBD, and it's like, you know, someone's name and design or like, you know, something like that. This doesn't happen that often, but it does happen. It's happened a few times. And it's just such a bad user experience for them. For one thing, I'm like, can you just not abbreviate your company as CBD like that? You know, but it's just a hard problem to manage because it's a terrible user experience for them. And there's kind of no good way around that. You just will occasionally have false positives.
And for better or worse, we're in a competitive industry. So if in our attempts to catch bad actors, we're too harsh on our good users and we make the experience too difficult, it's not super challenging for them to move on and try someone else.
And same can be said with the malicious people too, right?
Yeah, we want a bad user experience for malicious users. Yeah, they can go somewhere else. But for legitimate actors, we can't have that.
I guess that gets it. Obviously, the trade-off between user experience and false positives, that's, I would say, something that's very common to many data science problems. Are there any other data or data science specific challenges that behavior like this poses?
I think one thing is just the volume of the data. Klaviyo sends a lot of messages on behalf of a lot of accounts. And models that look at this kind of stuff can be pretty sophisticated, and we're not just looking for the word CBD, you can do that on every message. But for the much more sophisticated tooling that we have in place, it's a little computationally intensive to be running that on the kind of volume that Klaviyo sees. So we need to have some kind of creative solutions for managing that computational load while not disrupting the customer experience at all. We don't want to delay their message from going out because we need to check it or anything like that. But at the same time, we need to be able to, at a very high scale, run these very sophisticated models.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I think that's a pretty good exploration of the types of bad actors that we run into. So as always on this podcast, we like to end these episodes by giving practical advice. In my opinion, dealing with human behavior, and especially human behavior that's intending to evade mechanisms to capture it, is one of the most complex things out there. If you had to give one piece of advice to someone who's about to start working with data like this that maybe has a generating mechanism like this that stems from human behavior, what would it be?
I think one thing from my point of view is just get ready. It's going to be a constant evolving landscape. What model might solve for one issue might overlook another. So it doesn't hurt to have, one thing we've done is it doesn't hurt to have a bunch of smaller systems looking for various targeted things than having one giant overarching system that might miss things.
From a product point of view, I'd say don't be afraid to just try a bunch of different solutions and see what works, especially when dealing with that malicious actor group. You never really know like what little change might be enough to disincentivize someone from using your platform for abuse.
From a compliance team or abuse desk team perspective, my advice is to stay vigilant. You know, keep an eye out on what's coming onto your platform. When you catch onto something, try to keep an eye on it and see if there's other similar accounts that come in and then try to piece them together and see if there's any patterns, and then work with your internal stakeholders to better understand what are they doing and how can we improve on our existing systems or build new systems if needed to help mitigate these bad actors who might then scale their operations to create, I don't know, tens of thousands of accounts a day.
I guess a few things. Maybe the biggest one is just watch the feedback loop. This is a cat and mouse game. It's like trying to plug a leaky faucet or I don't know, like some leak, like anywhere that you plug, it's not just over. Like that means that the water is just going to try to flow through somewhere else. And, you know, you need to always be watching out for that. And kind of on that note, make sure that you have tooling in place to watch for system drift and watch for system change, because it will be changing. If you don't have tooling in place to be on top of that, like you can't stay on top of it by yourself. You're not just going to stumble upon the new savvy abuse. You need to be ready to watch for the changing system itself.
All right. Well, we've reached the end of the questions that we had for this episode. Again, I want to thank the panel for coming on and talking about this very interesting area. I know that I learned a lot from this talk, and that again was without even talking about solutions. I think there's just, it's such a rich area with so much to think about. So thanks again, all of y'all, for coming on and talking about this with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a pleasure chatting with y'all.
And that's all the time we have for the episode this month. If you were interested in learning more about Klaviyo, who sponsored this episode of the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast, as Klaviyo does for every episode of the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast, Klaviyo's intelligent marketing automation platform makes it easy for marketers to centralize and use every piece of their customer data to deliver hyper-personalized experiences across all their channels, increasing conversions of revenue. You can learn more at klaviyo.com. That's klaviyo.com. If you liked what you heard on this episode, if you found the discussion of platform abuse and the discussion of trying to catch human behavior using data and data science interesting, then I would recommend a few things. First of all, make sure you subscribe. We're going to have other episodes probably about this topic in the future, but regardless, we're going to have more episodes about using data science in practice and trying to solve real world problems with data and data science. So make sure you're here to hear the future episodes. Also, feel free to leave us a rating, give us a thumbs up on Spotify, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or whatever you think we deserve. Also, feel free to leave a review. Or a feature I recently learned about in Spotify is you can leave us a voice note as well. So feel free to do any of those. All of those help boost us in the algorithm. All of that just helps content like this show up to more people. Obviously, if you think that you know someone who would be interested in hearing this episode in particular, or any of our other episodes, feel free to send this directly to them. As always, if you want to contact someone because you have any questions, comments, or concerns about what you heard during this episode, best person to reach is me. The best place to reach me is my Twitter account. That's Lawson_M_T, LAWSON_M_T. Thank you for listening. Have a great month.